All right, everyone. This is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems, and welcome to another Bike James podcast today. I've got a special guest. I've got Kevin Estella, who is the director of training at Fieldcraft Survival and also the author of a really cool book that I have, 101 Skills You Need to Survive in the Woods. And so I'm really excited to get him on the podcast to talk about some wilderness and survival skills. Kevin Estella, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This will be a good wake up on this Tuesday after a great weekend. So excited to answer some questions and hopefully get some good information out there.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So I met you, I did a course. Like I said, you're the director of training at Fieldcraft Survival, which is headquartered out of Heber City, Utah, which is about 4 hours from where I live. So is a pretty easy drive. And so I came up there to take a wilderness survival skills course that you guys were offering, and you and Austin were putting that on. And so I got a chance to meet you and hear you in person. I was really impressed with your personal story. Besides being in, the director of training there, you're also a martial artist. To say that you've got an extensive background in wilderness and survival skills would be putting it mildly. So I wanted to just kind of start off with, tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you get into this preparedness thing? I really liked your personal story, that you shared as far as like how you got into it, personally, but, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into this.
Yeah, sure thing. So I grew up in Bristol, Connecticut. That's my hometown. My father is a physician. He's still practicing medicine to this day. He's 82 years old. And the guy wakes up every morning, does push-ups in his underwear, and still gets after it. He really was the first inspiration I had for getting into the great outdoors, because my father grew up in the Philippines during World War II. And in January of 1941, that's when the Japanese Imperial Army invaded that country. And since my grandfather was somewhat political, he was very outspoken, he became a target for the Japanese Imperial Army. And that's when my grandfather moved the entire, town and many of the families into the jungle. And that's where they lived from 41 until 45. Now, as a little kid, I was fascinated by the story. And even to this day, I still find it really interesting when I hear about people fleeing their homes, living off the land, kind of like the Belarus Jews did during World War II. So I just found it really fascinating then. I find it fascinating now. And, my personal interest in everything came from that. So as a little kid, I wanted to know more about this whole survival thing. I thought it was really cool. We would capture animals in the backyard with like a little box trap and then let them go. And that was like one of my earliest memories of doing things with my dad. Over the years, I started formalizing the outdoor education, reading more books on it. I still have copies of early survival guides from when I was like 9, 10, 11 years old with my poorly handwritten signature on the inside cover claiming that they're mine. And then eventually started teaching canoeing and kayaking, eventually started, guiding those trips, teaching more of the bushcraft and survival stuff on longer trips, working for an outdoor sporting goods store. And then I said, again, let me see if what I was taught and what I've been doing all these years is legit. So I started taking classes with Maine Primitive Skills School, Jack Mountain Bushcraft, eventually settled on the Wilderness Learning Center. And that's where I met my second mentor, Marty Simon. And under Marty, that's where I learned a lot of edible medicinal plants. Marty was a Vietnam veteran and Army survival instructor. So he took me in under his wing. I became his lead instructor there from 2007 to 2012. Somewhere along the line, I started writing for different magazines, which allowed me to get even more training, a lot of firearms training at places like SIG Academy, DeFord Performance Shooting, AMTAC training. Along the way, started training in Sayak Kali, became an associate level 6 instructor there, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So, I just noticed that everything started tying in one after another into, this job where I am now. And after 14 years of teaching high school history, I got offered a position at Fieldcraft by Mike Lover. He said, hey, I think you really need to come out here. I taught one class with them in August of 2020 at the height of COVID. I said to myself, this company is a place that I really want to be because I enjoyed everyone. I enjoyed the message. And I was like, that's it. So October 30th was my last day teaching in the high school. I moved out here in January, and I've been working crazy hours, doing some awesome stuff ever since, and loving every single minute of it.
Nice. Yeah, man. You guys got a good thing going there for sure. So, man, yeah, that's a great backstory. I'm a fan of history. I love reading, especially about like old, warriors. I guess this time old is relative, but I recently read the biography of Douglas MacArthur. So, the conflict in the Philippines was something that, I had read about, and obviously a lot different than your, more firsthand accounts and exposure. But hearing about just how, difficult it was for the Japanese to traverse that terrain. And then the people were, making use of that by fleeing and using the land to help, defend themselves against a much larger, better armed opponent, echoes of which happened in Vietnam as well. I just got done reading about Face, the David Hackworth biography as well. So just two very interesting situations where people who are very skilled in using the land around them were able to even the odds against a bigger, stronger opponent. So much like we learn in jiu-jitsu, sometimes technique will win the day. So cool. So one of the things that I you mentioned, and I think you said you got this from the Soyak Kali. Is that am I saying that right?
Soyak.
Yep. Soyak Kali was the readiness formula, or I forget exactly what the name was, but could you explain that? Because I really like that the way that you put that. When people say I'm ready, I love the way that you explain, like, okay, are you really ready? So yeah, could you share that with us?
Absolutely. Now this is where people wonder. They're like, well, how does all this martial arts stuff tie in? And as you mentioned, like, jiu-jitsu is a great example of positioning, right? Positioning is everything. We always talk about better weapon and better position. Well, that ties into, martial arts, into survival, right? You always have a better tool, better condition, right? Well, Soyak is another example of another martial art, another system that explains a lot. And I mean, when you read my book, you're going to hear Soyak reference, or read Soyak references throughout. The Soyak readiness formula is composed of three things: awareness, preparedness, and willingness. Now, you have people in the world who are, under the assumption that they are always ready, right? Which even the most ready person is never always ready, because there are times when you're asleep and your level of awareness is way down. So let's break this down into those three components. Awareness is your level of consciousness. Awareness is your intelligence. Awareness is your understanding of the environment around you, all the players, all the pieces, all the things that, how they're positioned and how they're oriented to you. Preparedness is both your hardware and your software, right? The things that you carry in your pockets, on your belt, the things that you have in your rucksack, but then also your skill level of how to use them, right? So a person can easily carry a pistol and say that they are prepared, but a person who is a more capable shot at, say, 50 yards with a miniature red dot is certainly at a much higher level of preparedness with that pistol than a person that can barely keep everything in the black at 3 yards. So now we have awareness, preparedness. Willingness is the one that a lot of people don't talk about. And willingness really comes down to your how accepting you are of, say, lifestyle changes. A lot of people will say, well, I want to carry a gun, but I have to change my outfit. Well, if you're worried about changing your outfit, you're really demonstrating a lack of willingness to live that more ready lifestyle. Now, I always tell people that there are people that are aware and they are willing, but they're not prepared, right? And that one for me, those are like the people that fought on Flight 93. They knew that something bad was happening. They weren't prepared, but they definitely were willing, and they made themselves prepared by getting the beverage carts and wrapping their forearms and towels and whatnot that we have from, recordings. There are people out there that are willing and they are prepared, but not aware. And those are the folks that decide, hey, I don't care. I'm going to go out with my friends and get, blackout drunk. And you could take someone, jiu-jitsu reference, you could take a black belt if they get blackout drunk, they might be skilled, but chances are they're definitely not going to be performing at the level that they are if they are completely sober. And then you have folks out there that are very willing and they are, I'm sorry, very prepared and very aware, but they're not willing. And these are the folks who they have all the tools and they're still found as the victim at the end of the day, right? You know, the example I always bring up is the police officer that stood outside of the school shooting. He had a gun belt on. He knew that there was a shooting and he waited outside. And that's an example of someone who failed in their job and failed as a protector because they had the awareness and preparedness, but they lacked willingness. Now, something that is paramount with all of these is honesty. Now, it's easy to say, you know, and we hear people do this all the time, especially behind the wheel. Oh, I've only had a few drinks, but I could drive home okay. You are not being honest with your level of awareness, right? Or people that say, well, I've got, you know, a pistol on my belt and I could fight off how many people. You've never taken a training class. You've never shot multiple targets. You never transitioned from one to another. Stop lying. And then there are people out there that say, well, you know, if that guy ever did something, I would do this. And then the next thing that happens, the guy demonstrates that he has no lack of willingness and that person is now taking advantage of them. So in all of the readiness formula, we have to be hyper, hyper aware of honesty and truly, truly be honest with our capabilities.
Yeah, no, man, that's great. There's so much to unpack there. So really one of the things that stood out was how, you know, willingness encompasses the you know, lifestyle changes that you might make, because one of the things that I've been trying to do lately is make riders more aware of the need for, you know, things like a tourniquet, right? Like they'll carry something to carry, you know, they recognize that something could puncture a hole in their tire. That same thing could probably puncture a hole in you as well. And so, you know, but you talk about it, but then it's like, oh man, you know, I'm used to carrying as little stuff as possible. And so if I was to carry a tourniquet, I would have to, you know, change how I carry, or maybe carry a little bit bigger if I wanted to maybe carry a little bit more medical gear to be ready. And so people, that's one of the things that they run up against, and that willingness factor is an important part of that, that again, a lot of people don't think about. You know, if you're not willing to make the changes needed, then you're not really going to be ready when you're called upon. And that's, you know, what you're looking for at the end of the day. So I guess kind of moving from there, from the readiness formula, so we can kind of talk more specifically about, you know, wilderness and survival skills. I guess, you know, just kind of a real softball question, like, why should a mountain biker care about wilderness and survival skills? What are some things that someone who's spending time on a trail out in the wilderness might, you know, need to worry about or could face?
Yeah, sure. I think one of the reasons why mountain bikers should care is because things do happen. You know, we talk about possibility versus probability. We talk about, hey, tomorrow aliens could land in the parking lot right outside here, come out, they could pull me away, perform all sorts of tests on me. Maybe some that I would like, maybe some that I would definitely hate. But realistically, like, people every single day get into accidents, right? Car accidents happen. Mountain bike accidents happen. People get hit by cars. People fall off of trails and they go out of sight of other riders and walker bys on the trail. So it's a realistic thing that actually could happen and does happen. And that's why you should, you know, be prepared for it. Now, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned how something could puncture your tire, it could puncture your skin. I mean, you think about how durable your tires are, what they're capable of riding over and not puncturing. And then you think about your skin has the same tensile strength as cardboard. It's really not a lot of pounds per square inch that's needed with a sharp object to puncture skin. And people are always like, oh, but you know, martial arts, right? If I have to thrust something, I have to push really, really hard. If you have a sharp blade, it's effortless. And I've dispatched animals with blade, and I will tell you that it's with a good blade, it's like skin's not even there. So you can imagine there are things out there that have thorns, that have sharp protruding points. You know, something perfectly strong, if it's compromised, could break and have a sharp metal object. Now it could be a threat to you. So these things do happen, and it's not paranoia. And on top of it, we see these videos, whether it's like, I know Black Rifle Coffee Outdoors recently posted a video of a guy being chased by a bear on a mountain bike. And people are like, oh, you're never going to encounter a bear. And my favorite line, I've been riding for 20 years, or I've been hiking for 30 years. I've never needed to have whatever. Well, just because you haven't needed it doesn't mean you're never going to need it. And yet you try to tell that to someone and they let this experience that they built up, you know, from the past be their justification for not being ready for the future. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's funny, man. And I've spent some time working in bike shops, and my favorite line was when people would come in and be like, man, I left my bike unlocked in front of that store a million times and never had a problem. And it became a cliche thing after a while. And I would, you know, tell people about that story when they're buying a new bike. I'm like, do you want to get a lock? And they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, dude, let me tell you, like, you may get away with it a million times, but on that million and one time, someone walks by, wants to take your bike, boom. And for want of a, you know, $10 bike lock, then there's your thing. And, you know, for want of a, you know, $30 tourniquet, you know, or, you know, some quick clot and a compression bandage, then you have the, like the way I describe it, like the right preparedness can be the difference between kind of a cool story and a survival situation. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, why put yourself in that situation if you don't have to? But you know, a lot of people just don't, they don't think about it. And so what are some tools that you would suggest people carry? Again, like, I think that there's some crossover, a lot of crossover between mountain biking and, you know, hiking. Cause I definitely like there's some mountain bike specific stuff that I'll carry, but the bulk of what I'll carry when I go out, you know, on the trail is pretty similar. And so, you know, what are some common things that people don't think about that you think that more people should, as far as like carrying with them when they go out on the trail?
Yeah. I mean, even if I'm going for a day hike, or if I'm just going like, let's go check out this fishing hole, I feel naked if I don't have a Swiss Army knife and a fire steel in my pocket. I make it a point every day to carry some type of cutting tool and some type of fire device, because at the very minimum, I can fashion additional tools with the knife. I can warm myself with the fire. I can signal for help with the fire. I mean, those two tools are so primal. I find it bizarre when grown men and grown women say that they don't carry something to make fire or a knife on them, because I've seen it in meetings where people are like, does anyone have a knife to open this package? And you look around and there are all these, some would say, able-bodied people standing around, and everyone's like, I don't have one. Do you have one? Do you have one? And it's like, you failed as a human being, right? Like, you can't even provide for yourself. So I would say a Swiss Army knife, a Bic lighter, you're probably better prepared than most people walking on the road right now or riding on trails. An emergency blanket has a lot of great value, right? You can collect water with it. You can signal for help with it. You can reflect your body heat with it. That's super, super lightweight, $5, right? Your metal water bottles, I'm sorry, your plastic water bottles that fit in a lot of those water bottle cages, there are cups, if you look for them, that are titanium. They're usually made by the Tokes company, that will fit inside the cage and still allow you to use your plastic water bottle. So you have a means of collecting water and boiling it if need be, and it's titanium. People can't argue that it's weighing them down when it weighs grams.
Right.
I mean, there's so many other items. I think a fully charged cell phone makes sense, because a lot of these places, the cell phone service has gotten so great that can't hurt you. And I know some people are like, well, I don't want to carry a phone because it's a leash to the world. Well, it is a leash. It's also a lifeline. So it's all about perspective change. I mean, the best thing you can do is you can gift people certain items and say, look, just carry this. Humor me, carry this for 6 months or 6 weeks or even a week. Tell me how many times you actually used it. A squeeze flashlight. You will use a flashlight more than your Swiss Army knife, more than the gun on your belt. I use my flashlight almost daily looking for things. And you can give that to people and they'll say, oh my God, I never want to leave home without it ever again. And then afterwards, it really comes down again to that readiness formula. People will recognize, wow, it feels really good. It makes me feel like I'm capable to have certain things on me. I don't like not feeling that way. Therefore, those feelings will drive your preparedness on a daily basis and make you want others to be prepared, because you're only as strong as the people around you. And you want everyone to be essentially at your level, or at least at a functional level where they're not a liability.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. One of the things that I realized is that, I mean, just what you touched on, right, is that if I improve my level of preparedness, then I'm going to want to improve the level of preparedness of the people around me. And so maybe it's not me that needs one of these skills. Maybe it's someone that I shared it with, right? But like, they wouldn't have had the skill if I hadn't have acquired it first and then passed it on. So it's like a force multiplier, you know, for society. And so, you know, it's not, I think that's important, because like, once you realize like, oh, it may not be me that actually needs this skill, but I may help pass it on to someone who does need it, then it changes it from like, well, you know, maybe I don't really need it, but it's like, yeah, but you know, you're going to impact everyone around you by increasing your level of preparedness. And so that's a really important point that that I think is, you know, people don't think about when they start doing this stuff, but it is something, because you want the people around you to be similar to that level. But so that kind of leads me to another question is training. Because again, part of that preparedness formula is training, because you can, you know, you need to have the skills. You know, as Napoleon Dynamite said, chicks dig guys with skills. So what kind of training do you think people should have to help them make, to be better prepared?
Well, before I answer that question, I'm going to give a shout out to our retail store manager, John Bliss, because believe it or not, John Bliss was in Napoleon Dynamite. He's actually from that town that Napoleon Dynamite takes place in. And he's got a lot of interesting trivia about, you know, that old farmer that would put eggs in his orange shoes and all sorts. He's got a lot of interesting yeah. stuff. And Pedro is the funniest man
ever. I heard you guys' interview. You guys were doing what was the subject? You guys were sitting down talking about equipment, like I guess like your favorite gear that you guys sell in the shop, I think was yeah. the subject. So one, I suggest people listen to that, because the information you guys were sharing was really good. But two, yeah, he did drop some really some good stories, inside information about Napoleon Dynamite. So but anyways, yeah, I forgot about that, but I love that movie. I love that that reference there. It's like, yeah, you need skills.
As I completely derailed this, sorry.
No, so, man, it's all right. So, but yeah, what kind of skills should people have to make them better prepared?
So what kind of skills? Number one, I would say physicality. I think very, very important. If you have the option of training to be more physical, and what I mean by physicality is be athletic, right? Everyone will say that there's a different level of athleticism, right? Bowling, right? I've seen some very overweight bowlers that will claim to be athletes. And yes, they are in a sport which makes them an athlete, but there are different levels of athletes. Be yeah. the best version of yourself you can be. And it's as simple as, if you're at a place that has an escalator or stairs, choose the stairs, right? You can never go wrong with choosing strength over weakness. So I would say, in terms of skill sets, condition yourself. You should know how far you can run before you truly feel tired. You should know how far you can run in a given amount of time, right? You should be able to push, pull, lift, and press your body weight at a minimum. Because there may be a time where you're helping a person that's about your size and you're pulling them, you're pushing them out of the way, you're pressing them over something because they might be unconscious. You might be lifting them off of a precipice. You never know, right? So that's a great metric. If you can set that as a goal, hey, I can run a mile in this amount of time. I can push, pull, press my body weight. You don't have to look like Arnold, although if you do, I'll give you the salute. You're probably taking a bunch of HGH and a whole bunch of stuff like that, whatever. Not my bag, but if that's you, do you, man. You'll just have to live with the shrunken testicles. So I would say that physicality, those are great skills. I think another set of skills would be understanding how to use your tools. And what I mean by that is, if you carry a knife, you should say, well, this knife cuts, but it can also pierce, it can chop. Know how to utilize all your tools to the maximum benefit. If you carry a flashlight, understand how your flashlight will impact your safety and security. If, say that you're clearing your house at night or looking around the yard, understand light discipline, understand, you know, that flashlight beam comes directly back to you, which makes you a target. So understand different ways of using your tools in conjunction with one another, right? Flashlight pistol, flashlight knife even. I would say in addition to using your tools and understanding yourself, I think another element of training that is so, so important is getting in what we call in the survival world, real world dirt time. Actually using your tools, getting out there and testing the limitations, but then knowing how to repair them when they get worn or out of best work of order. So actually getting in that time, because then you'll say, well, I've used this thing multiple times. And if you use a thing multiple times and you have confidence in it, then in an emergency, you're going to say, I can just fall back on my training, which is, a PSYOC quote, right? Trust your training. It's one of my favorite quotes. Because if you trust your training and if you can prove it, if you can pressure test something in training, it's going to work in reality. But if you just allow your training to be all theory and you're not using pressure and you know, whether that pressure comes from another person, a time element that you put on it or limitation on your gear, unless you have that pressure, you're not going to know the honest capability of yourself and all the things around you. So that's all the type of training I would recommend. And then obviously one thing that takes it next step further is train with a group, because there is no one person that's going to survive on their own, right? The whole idea of a person, doing things solo, being a hermit forever, we're not meant to be solo creatures. Little babies at a young age, when they know that they're being looked at, when they're getting attention, they light up. It's been proven, right? Even like for the guys that go to the gym, it's been proven. If you know someone's watching, you're going to push harder, right? Like I remember back in the day, like being a teenage, pubescent boy thinking like, oh my God, when I was in high school, like if the girls were watching me bench, I was going to push harder because I didn't want that person to grab the bar when I was getting spotted, right? So we're very, very social creatures. You have to add in the element of working with others in your training. And then you'll realize, wow, this is a force multiplier. Like we can build even a better shelter. We can get a better fire going. We can get better food on the table. I mean, you got to incorporate a group dynamic into your training at some point.
Yeah. One of my favorite descriptions of humans listening to you describe that is in the book Sapiens. And I'm going to butcher the way that he quote, or I'm not going to quote it, but basically he said, if you drop a single human in the wild, you've just given somebody dinner. If you drop 50 humans in the wild, you've just introduced a new apex predator. And yeah. I mean, that is like, we're so much stronger as a group. And so, the solo thing can only work for so long, on so many levels, but, I've always liked that explanation of us, because individually we're soft, weak ass things, man, but you let us get in a group and start working together and, look out, we can accomplish some things. So cool, man. So I guess, kind of my last, question or, thing to throw out there to get your thoughts on, I'm sure you've probably heard more than you probably want to stories of situations that turned out worse than they needed to be. And so I was just curious myself, like, is there kind of a common theme or element or skill or something that you see missing in the majority of these things that, just the average person would just do this. They really could have, we could cut down dramatically on, the number of these stories or I don't know what's your thoughts on that.
It's usually some type of multiplier, right? Now, if you read the book Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez, it's on my top 10 books of all time. I recommend it to everyone. And here's an author telling you to read another author's book. Like, this guy is an inspiration. He always talks about the multiplier effect. And the multiplier effect can be as minor as water, right? Like, cold is not bad. Wet is not bad. But you combine those two, cold and wet, now you're into some trouble. You add in the multiplier of wind, and now it's a survival scenario, cold, wet, and windy, right? Horrible. Now, that multiplier can be different. And I would say that the number one reason why a lot of these things happen is because people don't recognize the multiplier when it's happening, mm-hmm. right? You are driving somewhere and your gas tank is super, super low, right? Like the light is on, and you make the decision. You're like, I can definitely make it to the next gas station. Well, you're driving through the desert. Now that temperature is a multiplier, right? Because you could be fine living in that car if you were fully hydrated, but that temperature is going to slowly start making that car into an oven. The multiplier, another example, gear failure, right? You get a flat tire somewhere. Okay, let's bring it back to the mountain bike crowd. You get a flat tire somewhere, and the decision for you to leave behind the backpack that has, or not backpack, but like under seat storage or your handlebar bag, the decision to leave that behind so you can carry something else, that's the multiplier, right? Because now you're going to be pushing your bike. You can't get home in time, you know, and now you're out in the dark. People don't realize these multipliers when they're happening. And we don't think ahead because many times it's just, we're caught in our own self, right? We're caught, I call it the suck of self, right? Me. Well, what about the things happening around you? If you're not aware of this multiplier effect, right? It can lead to devastating second and third term, orders of effect. Now think about this one. A person gets into that mountain bike injury, right? Now they forget their tourniquet, they bleed out. Well, now you're out of the equation. But the second order effects, now your kid doesn't have a father or mother. Third order effects, now your kid who doesn't have a father or mother is traumatized that their father or mother would be so careless, and maybe that leads them to something else down the line. Third order effect, right? Or that kid doesn't have a father or mother, and now the new person that their spouse brings in is horrible to their kid, right? It really comes back to willingness. It comes back to that concept of readiness. Are you willing to let that happen? If you're willing to let that happen, you are willing to become a volunteer. You're volunteering yourself to become a victim. And that's another expression that we use all the time is there's no victims, only volunteers. If you know that something could happen and you let it happen, don't ever give yourself the justification of calling yourself a victim, right? And if you do use the term victim and you want to stop using that to embrace strength, call yourself a survivor, right? By saying you're a victim, it gives power to the thing or the person that victimized you. But if you're a survivor of what? Doesn't matter, right? Because that person or thing doesn't need to be even mentioned anymore, you know? So I just think if people are aware of those multipliers and how one little, here's another bike reference, one little, you know, link in this chain can set your life in a different trajectory, I think they would take the steps to make sure that those multipliers aren't as much of a factor.
Wow. Yeah. That's a really good way to look at it. I never thought about that, but yeah, you're totally right. I mean, you know, wet by itself, no problem. Cold by itself, you know, not as big a problem, but yeah, you put the two together and now you got more of a problem. So, but yeah, that multiplier effect is a really important thing on a bunch of different levels. So, man, yeah, that's awesome. I really appreciate your insights into this. I think that one of the things that I've really noticed in trying to talk to more people about this stuff is that sometimes like the question, like, cause they'll say like, why do I need a knife? But I like the way that you put it because at first I didn't fully appreciate how you don't say carry a knife. What you say is carry something. You're going to need to cut something. So carry something to cut something. You know, at first I was like, just say carry a knife, you know, but now I appreciate because it's a subtle but important way of looking at it. It's not, do you need a knife? It's, well, will you need to cut something? Okay, the odds are, yeah. You know, it's not, you know, carrying a safety whistle. It's, will you need to maybe signal for help? Be out of sight and have to signal for help for an extended period of time. And so, but understand that the way that you look at the problem that you're trying to solve changes how you look at it. Right. I think more people would be more willing to make these changes if they looked at the problem differently rather than, you know, looking at it like, oh, why do I need, you know, this tool? It's like, well, what does this tool do? And then, well, yes. Might you need to do one of these things? And if the answer is yes, well, then you need to carry that tool. So, so cool. Yeah. I really want to say thanks for, you know, helping me with my own personal journey with this and, you know, for taking the time to share this. And so besides finding you through the Fieldcraft Survival, what is it? Fieldcraftsurvival.com or what's the main website? Yep. And then I know that.
Yeah. Fieldcraftsurvival.com is the main website. Fieldcraft Survival on Instagram. My Instagram is Estella Wild Ed, which is just short for Estella Wilderness Education. I mean, people can easily just Google my last name and author, and they'll find a bunch of articles I've written in magazines. Feel free to print those out, hold on to them, reach out to me if you have any questions about them. My goal is to put out a lot of information, even if it bothers other survival schools and I'm putting out information that, you know, people are paying for in other courses. The way I look at it is you're going to get a different understanding if you do something in person than if you read about it. And I want people to be as aware as possible. And then hopefully that takes them one step closer to a better state of readiness. So yeah, I'm more than happy to answer questions.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah, I'll include your info when the podcast notes and stuff. And so, awesome, man. Well, I appreciate it. And yeah, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap this up for the podcast. And so again, everybody can check me out at bikejames.com, and I will talk to everybody next time. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. How do we stop the recording?